So back to our next sessions on various updates. And we'll begin as a first step with Andreas speaking about the recent announcements made by the IFRS Foundation. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate. Andreas, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Bertrand, and good day again, forum members. The slide that we included into your reading pack actually is a slide that depicts getting to the announcement that had been made last week, basically at the right hand of the arrow where you see November 2021 final determination, COP26. I think you have followed the announcement that the trustees made. The trustees, in effect, made three very important announcements. The first one is the one that everybody sort of was expecting. They created a sister board to the IASB called the ISSB. The ISSB will be charged with developing what is known to be IFRS sustainability disclosure standards. So these would sit alongside our own literature at the IASB, which will be relabeled henceforth to become IFRS accounting standards. The remit will be exactly the same, but the standards of the ISSB are set to be targeted also to providers of capital and especially inform users of financial statements in areas where there are effects that in the long run may be important to the value creation of an entity. So the focus will be on providers of capital in the same way as for the IASB, the remit and the type of the standards that the ISSB will be setting will be slightly different in the regard that they will be centering around disclosure standards. The new board is thought to operate in a very similar manner. It will finally have 14 members. It will have a full-time chair and one or two vice chairs, which are currently being interviewed, and the trustees hope to make an announcement by the middle of September about who these people might be. The members of the ISSB will have the same diverse background as the members of IASB, so they will come from different professional backgrounds, but will also come from different jurisdictions. That was the first of the very important announcements. The second one was an announcement to report on the consolidation of two other standard setters in the area of sustainability into the IFRS Foundation. And these are the two organizations are the CDSB, the Climate Disclosure Standards Board, and the Value Reporting Foundation, VRF, which has just gone itself through a consolidation exercise in that it has brought together the SASB, the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, and the IARC, the International Integrated Reporting Council. So these organizations will all be consolidated into the IFRS Foundation, and the hope is to get the merger done by June next year. The third announcement relate to the first tangible output that is hoped to come out of the ISSB. The trustees, when they announced that they will be considering the establishment of an ISSB, also created a working group known as TRWG, the Technical Readiness Working Group, that was comprised of representatives of the organizations I just mentioned, the CDSB, the VRF, but also the IASB, the World Economic Forum, and the TCFD. And these five organizations have sat together and have worked off the TCFD recommendations on what they call a climate prototype standard that eventually will be handed over as preparatory work to the ISSB. That standard can be downloaded from our website, as can be another piece of literature, which is called the presentation standard, or the presentation prototype standard, I should rather say. The presentation prototype standard would be very similar to something that you have in our literature, being an amalgamation of IAS 1 and IAS 8. So a standard that would set out the general disclosure requirements in areas where there is no specific requirement for companies to report on. This presentation standard would, in that essence, apply every time where there is no specific requirement. So in the beginning, obviously, for the ISSB, it would have greater significance as, say, in 5 or 10 years when there is a view that there would be more specific standards. The ISSB would very much in the same way as the SASB look into developing standards both on subject matters, but also in industry-related requirements. And it would decide on a base case by case basis as to whether something should be reportable and applicable to all entities, regardless of the industry that they are operating in, and other requirements, which may be separate or may be an offspring of a general standard, might be the specific disclosure requirements that would prevail only to entities if they operate in a certain industry. So these three announcements have been made last week by the trustees. Summarize the incorporation of the ISSB, the proposed merger of the VRF and the SAS, the CDSB into the Value Reporting Foundation, and the development of two so-called prototype standards, which have been handed over to the ISSB for their consideration and are available on our website. I pause here for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Andreas. Do you have any questions you would like to raise? GPF members, please.
Yeah, I have a question, actually. When it comes to the EU taxonomy, which has now been released and which requires a disclosure of financial numbers, how are you planning to incorporate or cooperate with these initiatives, and when can we expect that there is maybe some alignment happening?
It's a very good question, but very difficult to answer, because obviously this is a requirement that has been set by the EU, and it requires therefore both parties to actually agree how these could be integrated or built upon, at least, in the most effective manner. The trustees, when they set up the ISSB, have said that the product they were envisaging is a global baseline product. So a baseline standard that would apply regardless of where entities are domiciled, whether it's in the EU, whether it's in Asia, whether it's in the Americas. Individual jurisdictions would then have the opportunity to actually build on that baseline standard and amend it for their respective public policy requirements. And you could see the development of the disclosure taxonomy in the EU as being such an add-on or an amendment of requirements that the ISSB would sit. At this stage, it would be premature for me to speculate as to whether the EU taxonomy would finally be able to be completely absorbed or completely integrated into any ISSB requirements, the reason being that the taxonomy builds on existing EU legislation that doesn't exist elsewhere outside of the European Union. So therefore, my suspicion is that there will unavoidably some sort of duplication or dual requirement setting, but that is something that over the time the ISSB and the authorities in the European Union will have to decide how they could actually relate these two and whether they could do away with some of the requirements.
Aki, you have a question?
Yes, I have a question regarding the professional background of 14 ISSB board members. Geographic distribution is already mentioned in the paper, but type of, you know, background, professional background, or distinction between the user, preparers. What do you think about this matter?
Thank you, Aki, for your question. The trustees haven't specified that yet. They have only said that the members should come from a variety of different professional backgrounds. So it seems appropriate to assume that, similarly to the IASB, there will be some coming with a preparer background, with an audit background, perhaps with an enforcement background, and certainly with a user background. Now, the question is, the trustees foresee the key user base or the key audience as still being providers of capital, so financial market participants, but they do not rule out that the spectrum might be broadened by some people coming more from the sustainability arena that so far haven't been the primary addressee of our literature. But they haven't specified it in any way because currently they're concentrated on finding the right chair and finding the one or the two vice chairs. My request to you would be look out for the announcement that is rather imminent. It will be posted probably within the next week or the next 2 weeks, where the trustees will ask and call for future members. And I expect that in the announcement, they will specify which type of background of members they are seeking.
Thank you very much. Very clear.
You're welcome.
Michael?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could speculate a little bit on how you see the timeline evolving for the prototype standards. And, I'm asking you to predict a little bit on how you see those going through the due process that would be followed. Do you think we would actually see a draft by, let's call it second quarter of 2022. I know that the board has to, you have to find the board members and there's a lot to do. So this is a few steps down the road, but I'm sure that the trustees kind of have a vision of how that would work given, I think the importance that IOSCO and other bodies have placed on what the ISSB, on it as a body and its mission and how quickly it should act, especially in the area of climate. So any commentary you can provide would be appreciated.
Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you again. Has been a long time since we have both sat on the Management Commentary Consultative Group. Good to have you around. The question indeed is a bit delicate because the trustees thought how they could balance the urgency of there being a climate standard that is available to users, yet at the other side, balance due process considerations and respecting the independence of there being a board. Because as I said, currently, the standards the prototype document have been developed outside of the envisaged structure, this sort of framework. The expectation has been set by the trustees is as follows. The Technical Readiness Working Group have submitted their two draft standards or draft prototypes for consideration of the leadership of the ISSB once it is established. And the ISSB leadership has been given the power by the trustees to decide amongst themselves whether they want to take these prototype documents forward and make them an exposure draft even before a quorum of the ISSB has arisen. What they can't do is finalize that document, because for that to happen, you have to have the quorum of the ISSB. So the view is that the leadership, the chair and the vice chairs, could take the documents and take it to market in order to speed up getting comments on the document, but making it clear that the layout and some of the pronouncement might change, given A, the feedback that they receive on that document, but secondly also, and probably more importantly, given the respective perspectives of the ISSB board members that will be recruited. The trustees are still positive in thinking that they would have a quorum of the ISSB ready to go by the end of the first quarter. But even if it was the second quarter, I think at that time, probably, the exposure draft feedback would have been arrived and would be ready for the ISSB to consider. You already pointed to the importance of IOSCO. IOSCO has put forward a view that they look to endorsing the final standards no later than the second half of next year. And that gives you obviously an impression by what time a final product should be ready. And if you balance all these different arguments, I think you appreciate why the trustees have arrived at their view not to wait until the ISSB is complete, let alone have all 14 members, but to give authority to the chair and the vice chair to abridge the process, take the existing documents to market, seek comments, and have the entire feedback be reconsidered by the ISSB once it comes into existence in order to speed up the process.
Thanks. Thank you. That's really helpful.
Thank you for your questions. Thank you very much, Andreas.
My pleasure.
For your presentation and the answering to the questions. And we are going to move on to the next subject, PFS.
Okay, wonderful. So good afternoon, GPF members. In this part of the session, we will provide you with an update on the re-deliberations on the proposals in the exposure draft, general presentation and disclosures. A summary of the re-deliberations to date on key proposals begins on slide 13. And many of the changes are in response to feedback we've heard from you, either in the meetings or in the fieldwork. Slide 13 outlines the re-deliberations to date on subtotals and categories in the statement of profit or loss. The key points to note are that the board has decided to keep the requirement to present the subtotals, operating profit or loss, and profit or loss before financing and income tax, as well as to not develop a direct definition of operating profit or loss, and to retain the proposal to introduce separate investing and financing categories. The board has yet to re-deliberate on the definition of income and expenses in the investing category, but has tentatively agreed to amend the approach to classifying items in the financing category to make the proposal simpler to apply. Overall, we do not expect changes to what is classified in the financing category other than for cash and cash equivalents, as the proposed changes impact on whether income and expenses classified in the financing category are presented as income and expenses from liabilities that arise from transactions that involve only the raising of financing, or as specified income and expenses from other liabilities. The board has agreed to change the category for presenting income and expenses from cash and cash equivalents from the financing category to the investing category, as well as to change the default category for gains and losses on derivatives and hedging instruments from the investing category to the operating category, and to add undue cost or effort as a relief for classification of foreign exchange gains or losses. The board has also tentatively decided to drop the proposal to distinguish between integral and non-integral associates and joint ventures. Slide 14 is an overview of the re-deliberations on disaggregation. The board has confirmed the general proposals for aggregation and disaggregation and proposed additional guidance to help with application, including guidance on when disaggregation in the notes would result in material information, and when disaggregation in the primary financial statements would result in a more understandable overview. The board has also decided not to develop a definition of the term cost of sales as part of this project, but to explore providing application guidance to explain that as a minimum, cost of sales would include inventory expense. The board has agreed to explore retaining the proposal to require an entity to analyze and present operating expenses in the statement of profit or loss based on their nature or function, and in response to your feedback, has also agreed to withdraw the proposed prohibition on a mixed presentation. In October, the board discussed how to alleviate the cost of its proposal to provide an analysis of expenses by nature in the notes when an entity provides an analysis of expenses by function in the statement of profit or loss. It is decided not to explore specific undue cost relief and instead ask the staff to explore the cost of providing a limited analysis of expenses by function, by nature for each function. So this is described generally as a partial matrix approach. And it will also redeliberate the proposals for unusual items. Slide 15 outlines the redeliberations on management performance measures, or MPMs. The board has confirmed that an entity will be required to disclose information about MPMs in the financial statements, but in order to maintain the focus of the on the project objective, the board has tentatively decided not to explore expanding the scope of MPMs beyond subtotals of income and expense. At the September board meeting, the board began discussing public communications and other aspects of the definition, with follow-up discussions scheduled at the board meeting next week. At the October board meeting, the board tentatively decided to amend the specified subtotal operating profit or loss before depreciation and amortization to exclude impairments of assets in the scope of IS 36. I would now like to move to the question for GPF members on slide 17. And so given the board's decisions on the proposals to date, are there particular effects on the cost of application that the board should consider? So, and now open the floor to comments from GPF members.
Who wants to begin answering this question? Yes, Ben, please.
I think on the, I mean, we had a pre-discussion about this. I think the main concern from most GPF members on the cost of application regards the proposals, at least those in the exposure draft, to require anybody doing a functional basis P&L to also do this nature of expense restatement, which would be incredibly time consuming and incredibly expensive, particularly for anyone operating a standard costing system where a lot of these costs get sort of built into the standard cost of inventory and then get that way. It's not so easy, but it's simply not possible in the existing financial reporting system such as SAP to actually do that. So I think if the board are looking to move away from that, that is extremely welcome. But I think if you're looking to develop some kind of targeted disclosure there, I would encourage you to look at the fact that, for example, on employee benefits, depreciation, amortization, there's a lot of stuff already there in the other standards on actual types of expense. So please be cognizant of the effort involved in actually doing that. And also be aware that requiring that kind of thing actually makes it a much longer task for anybody to implement it. So, for example, the ED as it's currently written, if you take that one part of it out, it is something we would consider early implementing. But if you keep that one bit in, it is something we could not possibly implement within 3 years. So I think you need to be cognizant of which battles do you really want to fight on this and how important is some of this stuff in the bigger scheme of things. Because I think once you do publish the final standard, I think you'd actually quite like people to implement it sooner rather than later.
Ida, you wanted to ask a question to Jan. reacting to his comments.
Yeah, thanks, Bertrand. But I can see Richard had a comment, so maybe she will let Richard go and I can come in later.
Okay, thank you, Ida. Richard?
On the same topic, the expenses by nature, if you're a manufacturing company with a standard costing system, that is, at the moment, impossible for us to comply with. And to make that change would require both changes on our part, but also require changes by the ERP vendors to do that. So we were to do that, we'd be looking at 5 to 10 years to get to be able to do an analysis by nature. And in our industry and for ours, there's no benefit of looking at the business by nature. By function is the way that the business is managed, the way it's assessed, the way it's the way it's determined. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Ida, your turn.
Okay, so, thanks, Ian and Richard, both. And I hope you were very pleased when Ryan said what she did in her tee up, that the board has decided to see how we can move away from this proposal to require analysis of all operating expenses by nature for companies that report by function. I hope you can hear me well, because I hear lots of background noise. That's good.
We hear you perfectly, Ida.
I just wanted to ask both of you if you had any initial reactions to what Ran presented as a partial matrix approach. This wasn't in the slides, because this is a decision the board has made only in October meeting after we have posted the slides for you. But the idea is to explore approach where companies will provide limited information about nature of expenses for each function. So for example, Ian, you referred to employee benefits. So in this example, would be showing how much of those employee benefits are in cost of sales versus other functions. And the reason the board wants to explore this is I heard Richard, and I heard the comments, you know, over many years of discussion with GPF, that you don't feel maybe this information is always useful. But we have repeatedly feedback from investors that this is something that they need for their analysis and would like to receive for all companies, regardless of what they have in primary financial statements. So just as a background, this is why the board wants to continue pursuing this, but considering the cost of application and not making it overly burdensome. And just a final note, Ian, I really appreciate you making comment on early application again. That's really good feedback to hear, regardless of this specific proposal, which is a bit troublesome. So I don't know if you have any comments or reactions to this.
Yeah, happy to. I'll withhold judgment on the board's revised proposals until I've actually seen them. I would sort of, if what you're going to develop is more Sudoku tables like we have in IAS 19, I'm not sure that's necessarily the right approach. I really do question who is asking for this and what it's used for. I've been in my job dealing with investors for 20 years. No one has ever asked us for this stuff. I suspect some people who are asking for it are just wanting information so they can put it into their spreadsheets, and it just makes their life a little bit easier when they're running their sort of algorithmic models. I don't think anyone who's trying to model a company, it's not useful. And please believe it, if this stuff were useful, we would do it ourselves. We would have it ourselves. And it's not that we have it and we're sort of somehow keeping a big secret, because we don't want to sort of be transparent. We don't use this to run the business. So it's a real struggle for many preparers to understand how anyone who's trying to understand and value a business thinks they can use stuff that we don't use ourselves, that we don't find useful in any way. So I would be, it's a step in the right direction, but it's like you sort of, you're not going to walk over the cliff, which is welcome, but then I think the question is rather come back to the cliff and actually deliver some stuff that's actually useful to people.
Can I add? I think you should also ask,
Richard.
You should also ask those investors that are asking for, say, employee benefits and cost of sales. Would employee benefits incurred in the period be just as useful to them? I think it would probably be more useful. And from our perspective, employee benefits for the period is something that we disclose now and can do. Employee benefits and cost of sales, we can't do because we don't know. We don't have the breakdown of the employee benefits that are in inventory or that have been capitalized to fixed assets. When we've had the joint meetings with CMAQ, they said, yeah, cost of sales or cost of production, you know, for the period, they're equally good for them. They just want a measure of what the employee benefits for the year are. But the difference is, one is really, really difficult, and the other one we currently do. So I think you have to go and ask the question a bit more precisely. And I would suggest that you ask for employee benefits for the period and for the same thing applies to depreciation. So depreciation costs for the period as opposed to depreciation costs and cost of sales. We can do the former, we can't do the latter.
Thank you, Richard. Stefan, you wanted to comment?
Yeah, I mean, I echo what Ian and Richard has been already stating. I think it's a strange comment or request to follow up on something which companies are not doing by themselves when it comes to the requested information by nature on costs. So I'm really kind of puzzled around that this is supposed to be super important if the ones which steer the company are actually not really measuring or looking on this one. And then I have a second comment on I mean, I'm a little bit puzzled. First, you make from the ISB makes a statement that they have taken away the thought process around breaking down the disclosure of nature and function, and then you indicate there is a plan to reintroduce this in a matrix where you ask cost of sales to be broken down actually by nature. So I'm a little bit puzzled around. There's a little bit conflicting messages which I think you give, and I mean to Richard's point, right? I mean, it's impossible when you do a standard costing system to measure your as is employee benefits and cost of sales. It doesn't work in standard costing models.
Rika, do you want to comment or ask a question?
Yes, ask a question to GPF members. Thank you very much for helpful input about PFS project. I just want, I mean, please help me understand. If by function analysis is used on the face of the statement of financial performance, in that case, if you want to see disaggregated information to analyze further about the operating expense, what type of information you are looking at instead of by nature analysis?
Do you, Jan, you want to answer Rika?
Yeah, that's easy. It depends how you organize, but sort of something like research and development will be subdivided into either separate parts of research and development. It might be segregated regionally into various sub-operating functions, and it's managed that way. What we don't have is we don't have a sort of total for research and development of sort of the total staff costs in there. We could pull off the headcount numbers from somewhere, but actually it would be, even for something like that, it would be somewhat arduous to do it. So it's managed by sub-functions, is the short answer. And sub-functions might be business sub-functions or it might be regional sub-functions, depending on the company.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Stephen?
Thank you. So I guess just a feedback on that previous question initially, we would focus on margins and that would be the starting point. If there's further information required to understand margin movements, then you would drill down very quickly into immense detail in order to understand sales mixes, purchase price variances, and so on. But we would pull out R&D cost as being a separate category, effectively outside of the normal margin type analysis. I just wanted to fill out a little bit more on what the standard cost is. I'm sure the board and staff understand this, but I just question it because there seems to be an intimation that by just asking for staff costs, that that was a significant difference to asking for a full analysis. The issue is having to break open the standard costing system, whereby in inventory, then you are allocating staff costs, production overheads, and you're not just allocating those just on broad percentages normally. You're actually producing information within the standard costing system. So possibly each product, and actually looking at how much time it takes to manufacture that product and so on. So the issue is really how to break open that system and then to understand what was in your brought forward inventory at the beginning of the period, what was in your carry forward inventory at the end of the period. And by looking at that, understand how much staff costs, for example, were actually expensed to cost of sales during that period that you're looking at. So hopefully that helps just to give some clarity as to why RE actually isn't jumping with joy, because you're just looking at staff costs. The issue is in what the system produces and how it produces it, and the inability that we have currently to be able to break open into a different categorization as has been described. Thank you.
Ian, you had a previous comment saying you wanted to add something.
Yeah, a couple of comments. Firstly, I'd suggest if you're not going to require this breakdown by segment, it's going to be pretty useless. Even if we were able to do it, for example, at our company, we've got two operating segments. One has a gross margin of 80%, one of 20%. So if you just did a single figure for that, it would be pretty useless. If there is a desire for more clarity on some of this stuff, you might want to think rather about expanding what's in IFRS 8. One thing we do, we give a full P&L for our two operating segments, not just the narrow requirements of IFRS 8. And that's been very welcomed by our investors. And at that match, you might answer a few questions. I think the other one to consider is people who are using functional P&Ls actually have allocations. So, for example, all of our IT costs across our whole group, we collect those in a central IT cost center, and they are allocated across the divisions and the functions. So, for example, within R&D and cost of sales and marketing, there's a certain element of IT costs that are recharged. Now, how should we think about the headcount and the costs of that? That's not immediately clear to me how that would work. And this is another complication of the whole thing. And bearing in mind that IS 19 already has disclosures about staff costs, and copious disclosures are already existing about pensions and stock options, I'm really questioning how much more use some of this stuff is. And so it becomes more complicated. As soon as you start to try and operationalize this, it becomes extremely complex.
Maybe to jump there, because I quite struggled at last board meeting's discussion what exactly the partial matrix approach was. So one board member kindly explained to me what he had in mind. Actually, it means to take your example on personal costs, it would be to reconcile on certain by nature expenses, to reconcile it to where it allocates into each function. So you were mentioning cost of sales, SG&A, R&D. So it would mean presenting a matrixed approach of the personal costs break down within each function.
Yeah,
so
we can't.
I think what the staff is probably asking your views on is whether this would be feasible or still not feasible, and if not, why?
Okay, let's give it another go. In our cost of sales line in our P&L, it includes the amounts we pay to folks in our manufacturing sector in respect of inventory that we have sold this year. So any staff costs for manufacturing staff, the inventory that is not sold this year, that's sitting in inventory, that'll be expensed next year. Conversely, stuff that we manufactured last year, the element of the staff costs from last year actually flows into this year's P&L. That's at standard. The variances run through at a different method, so there's an element of the variances that go in there. In addition, in cost of sales, there are allocated staff costs for certain functions such as IT that I've elaborated that are in there, and there are other ones like that. It depends how the company will have its allocation system with working within its P&L. What's easy for us to tell you is we can tell you how many people are working in manufacturing, and we can tell you the basic cost incurred in terms of wages and salaries. But what we can't tell you is how much of that actually hits cost of sales this year and on which particular line it hits. Wow.
Yeah. Maybe, yes. I can add to that. So when a product is sold, the standard cost of the product is charged to cost of sales. The standard cost of each product is built up looking at, and has direct materials, direct labor, production overhead, which includes amortization, supervisory labor, etc. Maybe there might be 50 cost elements in the standard cost. That gets posted as one number to cost of sales, not as 50 numbers to cost of sales. So we can tell the standard cost of sales, but no breakdown. And the difference between the standard cost that was taken out of, say, production overhead, and the total production overhead comes through variances. So we can't at all break down the amount of employee costs in cost of sales. We just can't get to it. We can give you the employment cost for the period or for the in cost of production. So the total employment cost for the year we can give you, but we can't give you the employment costs that are included in cost of sales. It's not possible with a standard costing system. And the ERP vendors are like give you very limited buckets to when you post that standard cost. They think there's something like post it in four categories, but we have maybe 50 costs in there, so we can't make it work.
Thank you both for these explanations, and you know I'll be familiar with this. We've been discussing this together over the years, but it's very helpful that you reiterate what I understand the key issues being the unbundling of the standard costing system. And as you mentioned, I think it was you, Richard, that in our joint discussion with CMAC, and I think they've repeated this several times, that they didn't think it was a significant loss of information for them if all information they got was just what you term Ian, a production cost, which is much less costly for you to provide. So I am hoping that when we explore this approach, that this is a route we can take. Of course, it's a little bit difficult because we are talking about expenses and here we are requiring costs, and cost is not even defined concept in IFRS standards. But I'm hoping that we can achieve that in order to minimize the cost, because I completely understand your concerns and you know the complexity of standard costing system. I don't have an answer for you, Ian, on the IT cost example and what would this mean in that case. So that is something we would need to explore and perhaps discuss further with you in terms of what is the most pragmatic solution for that and how would that be treated. I just want to use the opportunity to reiterate again, I heard you repeatedly saying for margin analysis, you look at functions, you look at sub-functions, why would investor want anything else? And just to reiterate, the investors have repeatedly told us they don't want this for margin analysis per se, they want this for forecasting future cash flows. So it's a separate exercise they would use it for. And you quite rightly pointed out for margin analysis, it is really functions that are the best way to look at it, as long as they understand what has been allocated to those functions. And maybe just a final point, I think, was it you, Stefan? I'm not sure somebody made the comment that the direction the board is taking seems a little bit inconsistent, and I just want to maybe take opportunity to clarify. So the board has made a decision to pursue an approach where entities would continue to be required to provide analysis of expenses either by function or by nature, not some other characteristic, but they can mix it. So there is a recognition. I think you guys have often given us example of something like impairment of goodwill, what function they are allocated to. So there is recognition that this can be provided separately, even when you provide analysis of expenses by function. But what is important in that the board also wants to explore limiting that approach to say, if you do a mix, if you provide any function, that function itself must be complete. And therefore, when you have any function provided, you would still be in the scope of this proposal for analysis of expenses by nature, potentially considering this, what we described as partial matrix approach. So I think that is all I wanted to say, and just again reiterate how useful it is to have this discussion and to highlight the key concerns that we can focus as we proceed to work on this proposal. But I see Ian has some more points. So Ian, do you want to come in?
Well, I can come in briefly, but if someone's trying to forecast cash flows, the staff costs, I think what is currently disclosed under IAS 19 gives you a pretty good way to do that. It's wages and salaries and this kind of stuff. That's actually the cash that's incurred. What you see in the P&L is based on what's actually expensed. And as we've said, some of the staff costs actually kept capitalized into inventory or even into PP&E in some cases, and never mind about construction. So I think IAS 19 and other standards like IAS 19, which gives you a lot of information for generating the cash flows. I can just repeat, no one has ever asked us for this. And in my experience, when analysts are building their models, they are basically modeling revenues. And once they have got their revenue model, they try to then say, okay, what is our manufacturing cost based on those revenues? And they build it up that way. And they want to understand what the margin is and where, why it changes from one year to another. They don't back engineer it to sort of reconstruct the cost of sales sort of bottom up from staff costs and whatever. They will attack it top down. They want to understand the margin. So it's again, I think I don't understand why people ask for this, and I don't think the rest of us do either.
Johan, you had a comment?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe we're saying a little bit the same things here, but I have very much difficulty to actually understand what, also after these discussions, what would actually the benefit be? Because it's, as you say, this is not something that is requested. I'm myself coming recently out of an IPO process, and we have spent the last 6 months getting questions from investors and banks, of which this has not been one of them. And I think also considering then the fact that this is a huge problem potentially for anyone having a standard cost structure. I think, I mean, if you ask an investor directly, do you want more information? The general answer is yes, but I mean, rather going the route what they are actually requesting, when it, instead of taking the other way around. So I really would also urge then the ISB and the board to consider that this. I don't think it's not only the preparers having difficulties or thinking this is troublesome. I think it's actually the case that this is not really to the benefit of anyone. It's rather just to a disadvantage for the preparers. That's at least my view to a large extent. If it would be too much detail required, as we have discussed.
Tom, you wanted to jump in.
Just a really quick question. Just sort of listening. So you guys have described in particular how for standard costs for cost of sales, very hard. I think Ian talked about very hard for R&D. If I think of other functional line items, say, for example, you had a selling cost line item, would those problems exist to the same extent for other potential major line items?
I can answer for my. I think it probably depends, but I think the problem would be by far the biggest when we talk about cost of sales. But the complexity would be much bigger there than in items below gross margin. But that's maybe only in my case. But in my case, that would definitely be the case.
Does anyone else want to add to this answer to Tom?
Yeah, I can add on Johan's comment with and connecting to what Ian said. I mean, if you look, for example, on the selling expenses, you have allocated IT costs connected to selling expenses, and that again includes IT employee-related costs, for example. So the topic actually continues in the same way. Whenever you have kind of common costs which you allocate out into the company, you will automatically run this. Then Johan is right, that topic is maybe less significant in selling expenses compared to cost of sales. But the problem exists actually across all cost lines.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
The allocated costs are a big issue. Our costing system and our reporting system is designed to maintain integrity of functional analysis. That's how we look at the business. That's how we manage it. That's what we try and maintain. We lose details of say employee costs versus other costs. Anytime there is a department where you accumulate costs and then it's recharged out, the department accumulates the employee costs and all the other costs. Finally it's reduced to zero, and the other departments see a recharge cost. You've lost the analysis. So yes, even within the other line items, it would be there are problems in trying to get down to employee costs. And really, if they're trying to project costs, they can look at, we can give them total employee costs for the year, for the period, that we can give them. And that, I think, on our joint meeting with CMAQ, that was sufficient for them. They didn't need it first broken down further. And you also have to look at, in the situation where a function is performed internally 1 year and outsourced the next year. On a functional analysis, those two numbers are comparable. On a by nature analysis, you've got completely different comparables between an in-house function and an outsourced function. So we far prefer the functional method, and we don't have a systems that are designed to maintain nature through the allocation processes.
Thank you, Richard. Any further comments on this issue?
just to thank, if I may, for the feedback. I mean, sometimes it does feel we are repeating the same conversations, but there is also use of that to just reiterate what are the key points. And I guess for me, you know, I hear your concerns about the costs. I also hear, going back to your early comment, Ian, your desire for early adoption of everything else, and there's quite a lot of else in the project. So I take that as a positive, and all I can say is I promise that we will continue working on this issue, that we find a right balance of fulfilling investor information needs and also making sure that the costs you have to incur are not undue cost. So thank you.
Do GPF members have any other subjects on the PFS project they want to touch base with the team, or can we move on to another subject? Thank you very much, Ryan, Aida. Bye-bye.